The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I'd like to tell you a little bit why I offered a guided meditation on breathing as part of our just meditation we just had. I was kind of touched by some of the encounters I had today. Some of the encounters were just ordinary encounters around, kind of like around town. And just seeing people rushing around, seemingly preoccupied with whatever their activities were. And in that rushing around and preoccupation, I couldn't intuit or sense that there was much reverence for the fact that they were alive. And the sense of reverence or respect or awe of almost like it's sacred or it is sacred just to be alive. And I visited some friends today who, from some of your points of view, are maybe elderly. And one of them, whose husband was uncertain if he was going to live for 2 more weeks or 2 more years. Someone else who just came from surgery and was still under the impact, tremendous impact of surgery. Someone else, the third person, was had a kind of neurological condition. I've known the person for many, many years, but you know, to watch the person, you know, shaking and their head shaking, and this human condition, you know, and seeing people who are older and the conditions of old age are taking their effect, and breathing and feeling the reverence of life and the care of it. And for me, to be aware of breathing, to sit and be mindful of breathing, is not an exercise, like a dutiful exercise, you know, just be with your breath and like you'd go to the gym and do reps. To be with the breathing is to kind of to savor or sense or feel the reverence for this life that we can feel from the inside out, to be alive now. And I find that somehow to really to feel the simplicity of breathing, such a simple thing, but to feel it really sensitively and fully, it's kind of, you know, feeling like I'm at the heart or the touching into life or touching into the specialness of being alive and conscious. And just to be here with this sometimes is pretty special, to feel that specialness. Because we're not preoccupied. We're just here with this amazing miracle that we're here. Someone came to a teacher once who was rumored to know about miracles. Said, "Can you tell me what a miracle is?" And the teacher said, your next breath. Next breath is a miracle. Cell phones are miracles too. We can appreciate the marvel of. In the old days it was telepathy, now it's cell phones. So what was it like for some of you to if you followed along that little exercises, 3 breath exercises? What was it like for some of you to do that? Jimmy.
It was nice. And this feels very loud. And particularly the one about no more breaths was it was it was okay. You know, Marana Sati is a long-time practice for me, and tracking that the first time I did it, however many years ago, we were supposed to go to bed and imagine we wouldn't wake up, and I was up on the roof of the building all night, you know, watch the sunrise. I didn't sleep much. So I've been watching my kind of transition, and there was an initial kind of like, oh, spike, and then it was like, oh, I think that would be okay. You know, it was kind of a softening to that recognition that, oh, it could be okay for there to be no more breaths.
Great, thank
like
you.
That possibility.
Mm-hmm. Very nice to know that. Did anything change for any of you with some of those three breath exercises?
Well, for some reason, as I was doing it, I became very aware of my posture and the way that I was holding my neck and my back in a way that was painful, and it had kind of been in the background, and then it kind of, the breathing sort of brought it forward, and so it just caused me to shift and kind of correct things to find that point where there was less pain.
Nice. I find that when I really tune into my breathing, there's a lot I start discovering about the rest of my body. And then the kind of the instructions the Buddha gave for mindfulness of the breathing was at some point as you settle into mindfulness of breathing to become aware of the rest of the body, or at least some of it. He called it the whole body. And this thing about becoming more embodied as we're breathing is one of the can be one of the great delights of mindfulness of breathing. Someone else?
Now it's on. I noticed with the focus on the exhale, I started forcing the breath out more. Whereas it was gently slipping into an exhale until I brought my attention to it.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Yeah, so sometimes it's not helpful in meditation, especially to keep your interest or attention, to have a little bit longer in exhale than you would kind of if you let it just do its own thing. But the art of it is to do it so it's not forced. The art is just to kind of, and I find what I do is I just let go more. Sometimes just letting there be more letting go, it kind of extends further. And so, but you know, once we start forcing it, then we get out of breath, it gets kind of tiring and difficult. This is very gentle. And what could also be interesting if you can have a little bit longer exhale, but just by letting go into it more, then it tends to make the inhale a little bit fuller. I don't know if any of you found that. So quiet. Have you been meditating for 45 minutes? Yes. If you can, the mic's there.
Hi. So I had the same sort of softening around when the guidance got to the last three breaths and the reverence of that and how the breath embodied more than just the breath, that really was, you know, life. But I thought it was interesting that before the guidance started, I was deeper in meditation, and then when the guidance started, I kind of raised up. Mm-hmm. Was a little more conscious thinking, and then at the end of it, it was great. I got something from it, but I realized that I wanted to get back deeper in, back down into that feeling, and that rising and falling of getting back to where I was before the guidance. I thought that was really interesting, because that was the first time I think I've gone through that in and out very consciously. Mm. And wanting to get back deeper. Uh-huh. And then being able to get back to that spot.
Nice. It's becoming maybe familiar enough that you can follow the trail. Nice. So, Buddhists have been doing mindfulness of breathing since the time of the Buddha. And there are stories that the Buddha, that survived from that ancient time, that talks about the Buddha going on his own retreats. He would go in for a month at a time into the woods to be on retreat, meditating. And he would tell people that what he was doing when he was on retreat was mindfulness of breathing. And maybe I'm a little bit peculiar in my associations of this, but I find it very meaningful to feel my own breathing and imagine that it's not that different than how the Buddha experienced his. maybe he was a little bit smoother, something. But the idea, the basic idea, the inhale and exhale. And so I feel like when I kind of make that kind of association, it kind of becomes richer, or it feels more valuable. Or this is what it's like. I'm kind of at home in the place where the Buddha was at home, settled and focused and present. It makes it, again, adds more richness to it. In one of the discourses, there's in these ancient texts that give the clearest instructions for mindfulness of breathing. There's a long prologue to it. And the prologue sets a scene. It's almost graphic in its description. And I think of it as almost like a guided painting, or kind of a painting, verbal painting that's being set. And the ancient world, they didn't have any writing, so everything was spoken, and so if you want to listen or learn anything, you listen to these teachings. And so it begins with this beautiful setting that's being set. And I can't help but to think that the setting that's being set is preparing people to get the instructions for being with the breathing. And so the setting that's being set is the full moon in the fall, right around this time. And in the plains of India, in a wooded area. But it's there's clearings, and large clearings in the woods. And around the clearings are groupings of different Buddhist monastics. Each of them around the senior disciple of the Buddha. And these little groupings, 10 here, 20 here, 30 here, were kind of on retreat for 3 months. They've been practicing and sitting and working with their teacher, who was giving them guidance in their practice. And there was a beautiful clear sky, and the full moon was there, and it was late at night, it was dark, except the moon was pretty bright. And the Buddha was kind of inspired by the 3 months of meditation practice his monastics have been doing. And he asked them to come all join him, and he said to them, this is really great what you're doing. It's pretty wonderful. You've made progress. You've settled in. Your practice has been great. And then he says, do it for another month. and so they do it for another month. And then the next full moon comes, and he gathers them together again. So this kind of setting in the woods, these people who are very dedicated to their practice, probably living pretty much in silence and just focusing on being present and breathing, being here. And then in that context, the Buddha gives us instructions of being mindful of breathing. And so when I kind of think almost this text that describes this instructions lays out the setting intentionally, because it's kind of creating an imagery, it's touching into the imagination, that when we sit down to meditate, we don't just sit down to meditate kind of without our imagination. We can almost sit down and meditate as if we understand the context for it is, I don't know, somehow connected to the natural world, sometimes connected to the cycles of the moon, sometimes connected to a large community of other people who are doing it. We don't do it alone. And so this idea of reverence and care and community, and when, you know, that we're kind of participating in something that's much bigger than just my in-breath and out-breath, but it's something much more that's going on here. It's a rich world. There's another story where the Buddha gives also the same instructions for mindfulness of breathing. And maybe I'm a little bit sentimental, but this story has to do with him giving this instruction to his own son. I have sons. I wish they would take instructions from me. But the fact that the Buddha would kind of go aside with his own son, and he gives this beautiful set of instructions in preparation for doing mindfulness of breathing. And that also, I think, uses the imagination to some degree, because he says, before you start meditating, kind of make your mind like the earth. The earth is not troubled. Back then, this is 2,500 years ago. The earth is not troubled by the things people throw on it or yell at it or say to it. Make your mind like the waters. The waters are not troubled by people spitting in it. Make your mind like the fire. Fires are not disturbed by, you know, putting trash in it or something. Make your mind like the air. Throw rocks in the air and the air is not disturbed. So he kind of sets this kind of imagery of a mind that's going to be equanimous, kind of peaceful, kind of unreactive, not troubled, not troubled by the things that happen. I imagine that maybe his son had trouble that day. We think his son was about 13 for the story. And so, you know, maybe his, you know, teenagers had challenges. So this kind of gives this imagery of being like the earth. And then he gives him the instructions in breathing. And the instructions, the core instructions of breathing, are also the beginning instructions that the Buddha gave for mindfulness practice. There are three places, major places, where the Buddha teaches mindfulness. And in all three of the teachings, they all begin with the same steps. They begin with being aware of whether you're breathing short breaths or long breaths. And, you know, why is that so interesting? It's kind of like giving you a handle to be present for your breathing. It's like, you know, not just being present for your breathing, but it's a little like, oh, pay attention to this, like a little handle, hold on to that. Is your breathing short, shallow, or is it long and deep? Generally, part of the reason for offering this is that as people tend to breathe longer, their breathing tends to become longer. The more time we breathe, if we settle in, the breathing tends to become longer and longer at first. So more relaxed, as the muscles, the diaphragm relax, the chest relax, the holdings we have begin to relax, the breathing tends to become longer, longer exhales and longer inhale. And so if you're kind of tuning into your breathing and you start noticing, oh, it's shallow now or it's short now, you don't have to change it, but you're beginning to take in the information that the mind needs to know to begin settling into the breathing. And then you start noticing it becomes longer over time as you're getting focused and present for it. And that's a kind of a good sign. as meditation goes further, sometimes it gets shallower again, but it gets shallower because it gets more and more subtle. Sometimes in a really deep meditation, the breath seemingly stops breathing. It becomes like you... The first time it happened to me, my breath stopped, and I was so content and so happy to sit there and just so peaceful. And the breath got more and more subtle and more and more subtle. And then I was completely unself-conscious about it. I was kind of like absorbed in this experience. And then the breathing stopped and was so peaceful. And then I noticed that it stopped. And I suddenly gasped, and I kind of said in my mind, I said, I'm going to die. Because you're supposed to breathe to stay alive, right? So that was the instinct that operated. And it took me some time to learn that you don't, in meditation, deep meditation, you don't die when you no longer experience yourself breathing. Partly it is you don't need, you know, a huge part of the energy system in our body, what it fuels is our brain. And if the brain gets really, really calm, you don't need to, you know, this metabolism that creates, you know, this energy, sugar, and whatever it sends up to the brain, is not needed. And so the breathing can get more and more shallow and quieter, because you don't need as much oxygen, because a big part of the oxygen drain or the energy drain is no longer draining energy. So this mind gets really, really peaceful and calm, and the breathing can feel like it completely stops. And it can be a beautiful experience. Anyway, so, but first it can start more kind of short breaths, and then it gets, as people calm down, it gets deeper. And then as it gets deeper, sometimes it gets short again, but if a whole different way. So the Buddha said, notice this, like a little handle on the experience of breathing to stay focused and hang in there. And I found that sometimes if we try to be aware of like 45 minutes of meditation, the breath the whole time, it's too ambitious. But three breaths, you know, that's more modest, right? And if you do three breaths and then do it again and again, it could be actually sometimes easier to hang in there and get focused and get settled. And after a while, you don't have to count anymore because you're kind of there and settled. And this three-breath meditation is I call it a three-breath journey. If you try that in the middle of your daily life, you know, you can probably afford to take three breaths out of your life, you know, just kind of whatever you're doing. And just really stop, maybe close your eyes, and just do the three-breath journey. Just stay with three breaths. And the chances are you'll be a different person at the end of those three breaths. It doesn't take that much to change things. If you give yourself over to the breath that's fully, you know, kind of fully, just really be just the breathing. And if it's only three, sometimes it's easier to give up your thoughts and concerns because you can always get back to them quickly. And so do the three-breath journey. You know, in the middle of the day, do it periodically through the day. You probably have a very different day. But also in meditation, longer periods of meditation like we do here, you might start off, there's a whole series of three-breath meditations. The Buddha, after giving this instructions, just know whether it's a short breath or no, it's a long breath. He said, become aware of your body as you're breathing. And as people settle into their breathing and get a little more focused on breathing, for many people, it tends to be kind of natural that they start becoming aware of other things besides their breath. And their body starts kind of becoming more, speaks to them, or is more awake or more activated or something, become aware of the body. So become aware of the body, kind of, how's the body experience breathing? What happens in the body as it breathes? And to become aware of the kind of the range of sensations, the range of expansion and contraction in the torso that happens as we breathe, fills out and you get an embodied sense of breathing. And this embodied sense of breathing, for me, kind of adds to this reverence, adds to this specialness, like fullness, like, wow, I'm really here. And if you succeed also in this, to have the mind get quieter and quieter, to really have a high quality experience of being really here can be mind changing for some people. A lot of people, like the people I saw going around distracted today, there's a lot of people who can spend a lifetime, they're not really present. They're not really here for their experience. And there's something about letting go of all the other concerns and really being here with your experience, relaxing and settling in, and feeling really alive, three-dimensionally alive, contentedly alive, and just breathing, just here for that. That is so sweet, and more than sweet, it's phenomenally healing for many people. Because to not do that is, for many people, is to be fragmented, is to be caught up in concerns and worries and anxieties and desires and fantasies, and we become dispersed, we become fractured people, being, you know, running around, having mind kind of split and chasing our distractions. But if we're not distracted and really here in the fullness of our experience, it's a healing experience to be in. So the Buddha said, be aware of short breaths, be aware of long breaths, be aware of the whole breath, the whole body as you're breathing. And then he said, as you're breathing, continue breathing, relax your body. Relax, and what you can relax in your body is you relax the tensions that we have, the places of holding, the tightness in the muscles, the places where our posture is to be held tight or something. What we're relaxing is the impact the mind has on the body. Our tensions we carry in our body have their origin in what the mind's doing. The mind is anxious, the mind is tense. All too easily that gets transferred into the body. And so there's then a reciprocal or feedback mechanism that if you begin to relax your body of the places that are tense because how the mind also begins to relax. That's the basic instructions that Buddha gave, the most basic for mindfulness of breathing. In one set of instructions, he goes on to give the instructions that are nowadays called the mindfulness instructions, the basic instructions in mindfulness. In another set of instructions, he gave a whole other set of instructions for mindfulness of breathing that builds on that and goes further for a total of 16 steps, 16 different exercises to go deeper and deeper into meditation. And so when I practiced in Zen monasteries in Japan, I had a teacher who said, everything you need to know about Buddhism can be discovered through your breathing. That was a pretty cool thing to say, I thought. I don't know if it's completely true, but he'd been a monk for years and years and years, he was a great teacher. And for him to say that, you know, certainly got my attention that breathing, wow, it must be pretty cool, pretty important. That he says that all of Buddhism can be experienced through just being with your breath. The idea that somehow your breath is the book of Buddhism that's going to reveal so much. And I would say that one of the great treasures of my lifetime has been now over 40 years of meditating on my breathing. Rather than, you think after a while I get bored with it, right? Oh, it's long enough. It's the opposite. The more I do it, it just continues to get richer and richer and more valuable and more interesting to be there in that experience of breathing. It's like life comes alive, and it's almost like the spiritual dimensions of life get revealed. Greater experiences of freedom and presence and joy and happiness come from this experience, simple experience of giving myself over to just the experience of breathing, relaxing into it, entrusting myself in the experience of breathing. But this idea of entrusting ourselves in the breath is an alternative to the unconscious, maybe, entrusting ourselves we do to our thoughts. You maybe don't think of yourself this way, but we kind of, sometimes, we must have a lot of confidence in our thinking. Otherwise, we wouldn't do so much of it. And the track record of some of us of thinking successfully is not so great. I'd rather hang out repetitively with my breathing than some of my repetitive thoughts, which are kind of, those are boring. And so to kind of shift where we trust our life to, instead of entrusting it that thoughts are somehow going to solve all our issues, but to really trust the breathing and then watch what opens up. Trust the breathing so the thinking mind feels safe enough that it doesn't have to try to think so hard anymore. It doesn't have to plan the future. It doesn't have to worry about what's going to happen. It doesn't have to worry about what did happen and correct what happened, or doesn't have to make up fantasies to be entertaining. To really trust the experience of breathing and just breathe. Just breathe. Just be with the breathing. Let the thinking mind become quiet. It's like the world opens up in a very dramatic way. And I like the expression opens up, because it's kind of like things become expansive and open in that stillness and quiet. And in the process of doing this, there's all kinds of difficulties that come up. And the difficulties are meant to come up so we can face them and deal with them. It's almost as if as we're breathing and we're settling in more and more, we go through the layers of places in our mind that where there's holding, attachment, clinging, fears, memories that are difficult that go on. And then to kind of go through them, we're kind of doing house cleaning. And we just breathe with them. And I sometimes have imagined that my breathing is a broom that's kind of sweeping the floor. So all kinds of, sometimes quite difficult things can come up, meditation, emotions, and memories, and I just kind of, okay, that's what it is today. And then I just kind of imagine I'm breathing through it, breathing with it, and maybe like doing house cleaning. And then it's kind of something begins settled, and many things can get resolved, some of our difficulties. I would say it this way. Some of the things that we struggle with don't need to be solved. They need to dissolve. And so the idea of sitting quietly in meditation and just breathing with it and breathing through it allows for this dissolving to happen. It's going to dissolve away. To be too concerned with the solution is to be adding to the problem. It's kind of like it's kind of like being too concerned with figuring out a solution to things. It's kind of like putting things in a straitjacket so they can't unravel themselves. But to breathe through it and open up and just breathe and be with it, there are some things, I'm not saying everything, but some of certainly the inner kind of turmoils we can have a chance to kind of unravel or dissolve. And it's remarkable how much that can happen. And so what I've happened to me, and I think many people who meditate a lot, is they begin trusting this dissolving process, this unraveling process that happens. If we just stay present with it, just breathe with it, stay present. And as soon as we try to solve it, things, especially like in meditation, we actually, interrupting that kind of deeper and deeper process. So mindfulness of breathing, just to breathe. Breathe in and breathe out, settling in. So this is what kind of my reverence today, my sense of reverence for the breathing and the value of it. And I wanted to somehow share that with you a little bit. And there will be a day, when it'll be your last breath. So I said the Buddha gave instructions on mindfulness of breathing to his son. And he makes a remarkable statement at the end of that teaching. The last thing he says to his son, at least what's recorded, and that's in that teaching. He says, if you cultivate the mindfulness of breathing, you will be mindful of your last breath. Is this what you tell a 13-year-old? Will you be mindful of your last breath? And, I've been doing this so long, I would feel blessed if I could be mindful of my last breathing. I kind of hope that I am. Maybe like a dream come true. I'm not in a hurry for that, but it'd be kind of a dream come true for me to know that I'm dying and to feel like I actually would love to know that this was my last breath. You know, when it comes, time comes, this last exhale, I want to just go out with that last exhale. I think it would be so great. I know. And so I say that because of so for me, the idea of dying it's a little strange thing to say, perhaps. Maybe dangerous to say it, how I'm going to say it. To hold it lightly. But the idea that I kind of welcome the idea of dying. I'm not looking for it. I'm not going to speed it up. I have other things I welcome more. But when the time comes, you know, it's not like a frightening thing. It's like, the reason why I'm not frightened of my dying, that experience of dying, I mean, I could have a horrible death. You know, we never know. It's like the lottery, right? What kind of death you get, depending on illnesses and all kinds of things. But the reason why I kind of have this positive disposition to it is from what I've experienced in meditation. And the deep letting go, the deep dissolving, the deep quieting, the deep kind of going out that happens in meditation. It gives so much freedom and so much wellness, so much goodness in that experience, that I just kind of, if I can just be present for that last exhale, it's probably one of the best things going in town. So anyway, those are my thoughts. We have about 10 minutes. If any of you would like to ask any questions about that or make some comments about it what would you like to say?
Sometimes when I'm practicing mindfulness of breathing and a thought arises, it's difficult for me to distinguish between pushing away the thought and just returning to my breathing. It almost feels like returning to my breathing is the same thing as rejecting the thought.
It's a nice question. Nice that you have the attention to the whole experience to ask that kind of question, to just look at your experience and all that. So I want to appreciate it first. And then I want to make maybe a little unusual comment. Since you can't tell the difference, don't worry about it. Just keep doing your practice until it becomes evident. Whatever you're doing, you know, whether it's one or the other, you're still doing it. Do you feel like it's onward leading? It helps you to get more focused, more present, more here in the experience?
It depends on which thing I think I'm doing, I suppose.
Yes, but so. My suggestion is that it's not obvious, don't worry about it. But if it's more obvious, then maybe you can do something about it. And one way to make it more obvious, if you're pushing away, is that you're not getting settled. You're actually probably getting, if you pay careful attention, you're probably getting a little more contracted and tight.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you.
This was the first time that I heard in a Buddhist setting the description of the extremely shallow breathing. That was how I originally learned to meditate in a yoga community. It was very, very shallow breathing. Uh-huh. And during those times, were times I actually had the sensation of my body just disappearing. I would have to kind of touch my fingers to feel myself because there.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was just interesting that it was mentioned in Buddhist context. I hadn't heard that described that way before.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's true for almost all forms of meditation that as we get calmer and more concentrated, the breathing becomes more and more subtle. I'm not sure I want to... Shallow, subtle, soft, slow. Different people have different words they prefer to use for that. And it can disappear. And sometimes when it's really that kind of focus, that kind of concentration, then the mental activities that are needed to construct our sense of the body falls away. And so people have the experience their body's not there, or the boundaries of the body have become quite diffuse or quite expansive. And I've opened my eyes sometimes to make sure yep, it's still there. So it can get kind of funny too, you know, to have, you know, but it's kind of nice to have it all disappear. It doesn't have to, you don't have to make that too much of a goal, but it's quite lovely.
That exercise when you deeply breathe in and then breathe out longer, I've been doing it for quite some time and in the beginning of meditation, because what I notice, it tends to quiet the mind somehow. It's not mind over body, it's body over the mind. So I find it very helpful.
Wonderful. Nice, nice. I keep it up.
I also was struck by your use of imagination. And I'm not sure I quite, in the meditation practice, and I'm not sure that I quite understand what you mean by that.
Mm. I gave a whole talk yesterday, Sunday morning, on imagination and Buddhist meditation practice, so you could listen to the whole talk. Mostly what we experience as human beings and as we go about our life and all that is an act of imagination. But maybe I have a peculiar meaning, definition of imagination. Imagination is the mind's ability to construct an image or a sense or an impression of what's going on. So certainly when something's not present in the moment, if we're, you know, thinking about what happened today or thinking about a friend or what might happen tomorrow, part of the mind is imagining what that's like. And it might not be accurate because we can't, you know, it's a little bit of, maybe it's a caricature of what's happening or what happened, or a caricature of your friend in the mind's eye, or maybe you're stuck in some old image and, you know, it's partial or something. And so we're kind of constructing, we're kind of painting a picture or living with a kind of impression that the mind has created. Even in memory, memories are, it's not the same thing as having a video that you carry with you. The memories are reconstructions that are partial and selective and all kinds of things. And so, mind is constructing things, but also in the present moment, when we are with things here, there is a certain degree of kind of the thinking, imagination, projection, ideas, selection process that goes on in the mind that contributes to this, so that construction, imaginary construction inside is kind of like imagination, but it's kind of an accurate imagining. It isn't like imagination, it means it's fantasy. But it's this whole mental kind of inner world of construction that goes on that can be creative. It can be destructive, can be, really terrible, that some ways people imagine what's going on. But we're already doing it. And so when we sit down to meditate, we're bringing with us our habits of imagining ourselves as a person when we sit down to meditate. And how we construct an image or idea of who we are sometimes is not very kind. But it can be very deeply embedded into our whole experience of ourselves. We're not aware of how much we're constructing, we're imagining ourselves into existence, we're imagining who we are. And so I might sit down and feel like, I'm just a lousy person. That's just like the way the universe built me. And so it's so subtle, it's not even a thought, it's just an impression, it's a feeling. And imagination is not just kind of an image we create, we also create kind of an impression or a mood even. And this mood that I'm a lousy person, I sit down with being a lousy person. You know, that's a contribution of the imagination. It's going, in my use of the word. So we're doing it all the time anyway. So it's reasonable to some degree, and I like to say a small degree, a little bit, to use fire to fight fire. And so to actually choose a little bit the imagination that you want to have. Choose a little bit the image or the sense, the impression you want to sit down with. So, for example, you could do a little bit, it's not exactly what, it won't sound exactly like the same thing, but you could, go meditate in the alley behind McDonald's. That's a certain kind of context, and how well you, in the trash, and the overflowing trash, and cars going by, and you'd have a very strong kind of atmosphere in which to meditate. Or you can go in a very beautiful, peaceful, safe, forested setting and sit there with quiet and peaceful and greenery and beautiful light and sit there, and you have a whole different mood in which you sit down to meditate. When you sit down to meditate in the privacy of your own home, you're by yourself perhaps, can you construct in your mind a little bit of a memory, a little bit of a framework, a little bit of context that sets a mood for what you're about to do? Buddhists do this all the time. They do it by, many common thing that Buddhists will do is they'll chant the refuges. They'll evoke and remember the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, the community of practitioners, before they meditate. Their imagination is being fired up. They're kind of being reminded of whatever image or idea they have of the Buddha. You know, maybe they remember a statue like this, an image of the Buddha. It's kind of almost subconscious, but they remember the Buddha, say, I take refuge in the Buddha, and this image of this kind of person sitting upright, dignified, confident, present, kind of is in the atmosphere then, in the atmosphere of their mind. They think of the Dharma, the teachings, and there's maybe some impression that comes with. And so we're kind of like changing a little bit, using our imagination, this ability to construct and have impressions, to a little bit begin changing the mood and the atmosphere and how we are. And how much we do this is up to us. It can be overdone. It can be a form of escapism to create a lot of imagery and imagination. But the idea is, for meditation, is you can use it just enough to help you get focused and present rather than scattered. And so the first time I ever heard of someone who did this meditation, in Buddhist meditation, was a teacher actually, who told me that when she sits to meditate with her on her breathing, she imagines the breathing are the wings of an eagle. And she's just like, as she breathes in and out, it's like the wings go up and down. And that image draws her attention into the breathing and keeps it right there with the breathing. And then at some point the mind settles down, she's there, then she lets go of the wings. And she still flies. So that's an example of using the imagination to correct for the other imaginations that mostly are not helpful, to draw us in and be connected and be here. As we go deeper and deeper into mindfulness meditation, we want to drop away from all that kind of use of the imagination. But sometimes to get started, why not?
Thank you. That was very helpful.
So this was a little bit different evening. So I think it's very, very rare that I've done a guided meditation on a Monday evening like this. I'm sure some of you didn't care for it too much. But what did you think? Was this something that we should do a little bit more often? Or? Yeah? Well, there was a lot of yeses. If that makes the noes don't want to speak up, you can tell me privately.
Okay.
So thank you for this evening, and I bow to you with great reverence.